Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I am a PGY1, a transitional year resident. I'm ultimately going into radiology. And this is a podcast I feel is kind of appropriate given the time of the year. People are preparing to take step one and all that stuff. A lot of people are beginning to freak out. So I guess I might as well make a fairly detailed podcast that just covers different aspects of the exam. And a note of warning. This is going to be probably a little lengthy, although I'll try to be as succinct as possible. That's one. And two, again, take everything I say with a grain of salt, right? Again, I don't have all the answers, right? I try to be as thoughtful as possible with these podcasts, and I hope by now, if you've listened to other podcasts I've made, you get value from them. But again, take everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm just saying this based on my own personal experience, my experience tutoring and teaching thousands of people, and my experiences just being very involved in the test prep process for many people. So again, take everything with a grain of salt, but I think you, if you sort of pay attention, I think you can pick up a few useful nuggets from this. So this is a step one podcast, and basically, right, you know about the USMLE step one. It's an 8-hour exam. 7 hours is the actual testing time, and then you have like a 1-hour break that you can use as you please. It's like 7 blocks of 40 questions, at least as far as I know from more recent testing. And I mean, obviously, right, you register for the exam, costs about like 700, 800 bucks or something like that. And then you study during a period you known as a dedicated period, right? That dedicated period can range anywhere from 4 weeks to 5 weeks to 7 weeks to 9 weeks to 3 months, depends, right? I can't go ahead and tell you, oh, this is exactly how much time you need as a... for your dedicated period, but the thing you need to remember is that it varies by person. Obviously, if your knowledge base is really solid, you're a great test taker and all that stuff, then you probably don't need as much time, right? But if your knowledge base is really weak and you're sort of like starting from like learning the basics, you should probably take as much time as you need. In fact, I tell people err on the side of taking more time than less. If you notice that, man, I'm feeling really good about this exam, I feel like I know my stuff super well, then you can always scale back and move up your exam. Yeah, it'll probably cost you like 50 to 100 bucks. It's not a huge deal, right? Again, this exam is super important. And then I'll just say this. Again, there are no hard and fast rules here. I'm just giving you some nice general principles to keep in mind. If you're a graduate of a med school in the US, right, and you're like an MD candidate, chances are with a score above a 235, most fields, notice I did not say all, most fields are open to you. If you want essentially every field to be open to you, you probably want to be looking at something in the 240s. I feel like in the 240s, most fields, including derm, if you have a good all-around application, like you have research and all that stuff, you should be able to match fairly well. But if you fall outside of those categories, then I would just say in general, I'm not going to label any group, but I would just say in general, if you want to match pretty much at least getting to a good program in your specialty of choosing, as again, this is assuming you have a well-rounded application, you want to get in the 240s or higher, if possible. Now, one general principle I will say right off the bat is before your dedicated period, focus on understanding. Okay, before your dedicated period, focus on understanding. Memorizing minutiae is something that can come during your dedicated period. But again, focus on understanding. And this podcast may sort of seem a little strewn about with like talk about this here, talk about that here. I just literally sat down, wrote some random thoughts down, and then I'll sort of flesh out those points as we go through this podcast. And again, your length of study, you know, just varies on where you are, right? If you're a person that you know your concepts pretty well, all that stuff, then you probably don't need as much time, right? I mean, like, in fact, let's say, for example, you take a baseline exam and say, for example, you're getting the 230s or in the 240s, 250s, then you probably don't need like 12 weeks or something ridiculous, right? You can probably make do like 5 to 6 weeks or even 4 weeks and you should be good to go. Now, again, I say this, you need to be realistic, right? You need to assess exactly where you are. You don't want to be the kind of person that says, oh, you know what, I'm going to get in the 250s. But let's say your baseline practice test was like a 180, right? You're probably deceiving yourself. I'm not saying you cannot get in the 250s, but you need to put in very significant amounts of effort. One thing I will say is that med students as a group are very good sometimes at overestimating their abilities. So I'll just encourage you, be realistic with yourself. Ask yourself, how well did I do in my preclinical subjects? Were you the person that was getting like 99s on all your preclinical exams? And if you're like, yeah, I'm going to get a 260, I'm going to get a 270 with 4 or 5 weeks of study. That is very, if you were telling me that, I would absolutely believe whatever you're saying. But if you're the person that you were below average for most of your preclinical exams, you didn't do so hard on the MCAT and all that stuff, and then you're saying, oh, I'm going to get in the 260s, 270s. Again, it is doable, but you need to go in with the right plan. Like, I'm telling you this with all truth in my heart. There are people I know that did not do well on the MCAT. They probably got, again, I took the MCAT when a 45 was the max score. There are people that probably got like in the 20s on the MCAT, got into med school, they ended up crushing their USMLEs, got like in the 250s, 260s and stuff like that. But again, you need to go in with the right plan. The thing is, in general, most goals that people have for these exams, they can get to those goals, but they need, one, the right plan, and two, they need the right amount of time and the right long-term strategy to get into those goals. But if you're just like, oh, I'm going to do like everyone else, I struggled in my preclinical subjects, I was below average on most class exams, and I'm just going to study like everyone else, I'm just going to study first aid, do a Q-bank, and take the exam, you're probably deceiving yourself. I will tell you that right off the bat. There are other things you probably need to do to get to those goals you want, okay? And I'll try to give you some of those keys here, and I'll sort of go from there. Now, basically, the cornerstone of any step one study strategy involves a permutation of four things, okay? I want to be as exact as possible in this part of the podcast, but basically, doing well on any step one exam is a permutation of four things. Okay, permutation of four things. If you want to write some stuff down, this is probably a good place. Actually, I would encourage you to just take notes as you're listening to this podcast. But the first thing is a review resource, right? A review resource, that's one. And I'll talk about different things. I'll give my take on different study resources. So I will give you my take on these things. But the first one is a review resource. Second thing is a question source. Third thing are practice tests. And fourth thing is a learning resource as needed. Learning resource as needed. So let me talk about this first, right? So let's talk about the review resources / learning resources. The thing is, for review resources, right? First aid, right? It's the gold standard. Many people use this. Many people are successful with this, right? But like I said, for every resource, I'll talk about the pros and cons, right? First aid is a great review resource. In fact, I'll tell you this. If your knowledge baseline, and by knowledge baseline, I just mean your understanding of things. Like, if your understanding of things is really good, so first aid, right? So first aid is good. It's great as a review resource, right? But again, if your understanding is not there, trust me, you want to understand first before jumping into first aid. If the understanding is not there, you're just wasting your time with first aid. I can promise you. You can say, oh, Divine, I'm very good at memorizing stuff. Yeah, whatever. You can be good and awesome at memorizing stuff. But if the understanding is not there, when you take practice exams, you'll struggle, right? Because again, memorizing everything is not the key to doing well on step one. You also need to understand things, okay? That is where the learning resources that I will talk about come into gear, right? You need to learn, understand, and then after you do that, you can then jump into a review resource. First aid contains all the details. Maybe not all, but I'll say pretty much most of the details you need to know to crush step one. They are all in first aid, but the understanding, first aid just gives you the facts, right? So I give you an example, right? So if, for example, you read the first aid page on diuretics, you talk about how diuretics can cause hypokalemia, cause a metabolic alkalosis and all that stuff. Again, if you know those, you need to know those details for step one. But the thing is, you also need to understand, why is that the case? Well, a diuretic makes your volume down. If your volume down, you will activate the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, right? And then aldosterone will do its job at the principal cell. cell of the distal nephron and at the alpha intercalated cells, right? And then that's what ultimately causes your hypokalemia and your metabolic alkalosis. And then angiotensin 2 also does its duty at the proximal convoluted tubule and also increases the production of aldosterone from the zona glomerulosa of the adrenal gland. So notice, there's all this understanding. I mean, there's more stuff there. Go to my renal podcast if you really want to understand that. But you get the point. You need to understand before you just jump into memorizing details. And again, first aid gives you all the details, but it does not give you the understanding. So if you have understanding, you have a very good conceptual base of knowledge, then I'll say that jumping right into first aid and just trying to link ideas together and memorize as much as you can is a great strategy. But again, assuming that the understanding is already there, because the thing is, when you have good understanding, it is much easier to memorize and begin to integrate information. You really cannot integrate what you do not know in the first instance. Now, next thing I'll talk about is Boards and Beyond. So Boards and Beyond is a great learning resource. Okay, Boards and Beyond is a phenomenal learning resource. If you want to learn something well for the first time, I will encourage you, try out Boards and Beyond. I give this recommendation without reservation. Boards and Beyond is an amazing resource. It is great. It will teach you things really well. Okay, so if you're like, Divine, my foundation is really weak, jump into Boards and Beyond, learn that stuff well. And then after you get that strong conceptual basis, you can then jump into the first aids and whatnot. And if you're the kind of person that you're like, man, I really love Boards and Beyond. I really love the way it works. I feel like I can memorize everything in Boards and Beyond. You may even have the license to skip first aid. Again, I'm not saying you should skip first aid, but it's, if you know everything in Boards and Beyond, you understand, you commit it to memory, you will probably do just fine. Again, assuming that you're a good test taker and all that stuff, you'll probably do just fine on the USMLE Step 1 exam. Boards and Beyond, it's a detailed resource, covers a lot of what you need to know for the test. Early when Boards and Beyond just came out, it was not super comprehensive, but now I can tell you this, without shadow of doubt, Boards and Beyond is very comprehensive. There's no one resource that covers 100% of what you need to know for your USMLEs. But I can tell you for sure that Boards and Beyond Boards and Beyond probably comes very close with first aid in covering a lot of material. So Boards and Beyond comes, again, super close, almost like first aid in terms of covering what you need to know for your exam. And then another classic resource is DIT, so Doctors in Training. So DIT is one resource I feel like that doesn't get as much credit as it should. Again, does it have some pitfalls? Yes, right? I mean, you hear this that, it's like someone reading first aid to you. And that is true. That is absolutely true. But the thing is, there are many parts of DIT where they actually take the pains. Yes, they may not give the greatest explanations, but they actually give fairly good explanations. In fact, I will tell you this. If you're the kind of person that sort of like paid good attention during your preclinical coursework and you feel like you understand most things like decently well and you just need something to sort of put everything together for you, very quickly spruce up your knowledge base, DIT is actually pretty good for that purpose. DIT is very comprehensive for step one, right? Again, does it have every single little bitty detail in first aid? No. Right? But will you get most of what you need to get into the 250s or thereabouts on the USMLE Step 1? Absolutely. Again, there are people I've tutored in the past that use mostly DIT. They did not even touch first aid one bit, and they ended up doing extremely well. Like, this is like 90th, 95th, 99th percentile on their exams. I can tell you this. I myself, the person making this podcast, I essentially did not use first aid. The only first aid chapter that I really truly used when I was preparing for my USMLE exams was the derm/MSK chapter. But pretty much all my other knowledge, I acquired it from like other resources. So again, first aid is a great resource and I'll almost encourage you to use it. But if you don't want to, if it's something that just absolutely doesn't work for you, let's say you've used it for like 2 weeks and you're just like literally like threading water, you feel like you're not making any progress and it's not working for you, I am telling you this, you can do really well on the USMLEs without using first aid. There are very few people that do this and succeed, but I'm telling you that it is possible. Again, you just need to have the right plan, right? You just need to have the right plan. There are people literally like, Divine, I'm scared. Everyone uses first aid. Everyone uses this. Everyone uses that. And then we discussed, came up with a solid plan, just sort of based on what will work best for them as individuals, and they ended up doing extremely well. Again, first aid is not the end-all be-all. It's the end-all be-all for most people, but if it's not working for you, if you're, basically, let me just say it this way. If the question you're trying to answer is, can I get above the 90th percentile on the USMLEs without using first aid? The answer to that is a strong yes. Okay, the answer to that is a strong yes. I'm telling you this without shadow of doubt. Now, so DIT again, it doesn't give you explanations for everything, right? But it gives you all the information in a nice audiovisual format. And again, for some key critical concepts, they actually take the pains to explain. Okay, so DIT is not the worst thing in the world to prep for step one. I actually used it a lot when I was studying for step one. But again, I'm not saying this as, oh, because Divine used DIT, that means you must use DIT. No. That is not the point of this presentation. But before I used DIT, my knowledge base was, my conceptual base was phenomenal, right? Thankfully, I did pretty well in my preclinical subjects, so I knew my concepts really well. So DIT was just a very nice, efficient way to just sort of tie everything together for me. So again, I will encourage DIT first aid if you're the kind of person that your concepts are good. Those are probably good resources that can sort of get you to where you need to be relatively quickly. Now, Pathoma, right? Pathoma is another resource. This is a learning resource, right? Learning resource. I will just encourage you to use Pathoma. Pathoma is a great means of learning pathology. Pathology probably represents about 30 to 35% of what you need to know for the USMLEs. Pathoma is a great way to build that foundation. Okay, I will encourage you as you're going through your first, second year of med school to use Pathoma if you can. It's just phenomenal. It's a learning resource. It's like 30 hours long, but it will teach you pretty much a lot of what you need to know for pathology to do really well on the USMLE exams. And then another close cousin to Pathoma is Goliath. Right, Goliath. I mean, you've probably heard of this. Goliath has like audio files and has a book and whatnot. I love Goliath. Goliath is a great resource. It's a great learning resource, and it's a great integrating resource. Like Goliath is very good at explaining things and also helping you sort of like integrate those pieces of information. He can basically he reflects a method of teaching I really love, where people emphasize not just the concepts, but they emphasize those concepts in the context of how that information will be tested. And then they talk about it in different contexts. Like, for example, you could be listening to a Goliath lecture on nutrition, and they will talk about it in the context of pharmacology. If you notice, that's kind of like the approach that I've tried to take with pretty much every podcast I make, because I found that to be like a phenomenal method of learning. So Goliath, yes, the audio may be grainy, and you know, some people say, oh, it's from many years ago, blah 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 blah, but I can promise you Goliath is a great resource. I used it a ton, and it helped me a lot. Again, it's not a popular option. There's not many people that use it. It's kind of like old school, old fashioned, but it works pretty well. But if you like Pathoma, Pathoma will accomplish the same goal for you. Again, just these are just general recommendations. I'm not trying to lead you towards one resource or the other. I'm just trying to give you objective information about these resources. Pathoma is a phenomenal resource. I use it a ton. Goliath is a phenomenal resource. I use it a ton. You probably don't need to use both. You can make do with just one of. Actually, I'm telling you this. You probably should not use both. One or the other will accomplish the goal for you. Now, another commonly used resource is Sketchy, right? So Sketchy, there's like Sketchy Micro, there's Sketchy Farm, there is Sketchy Pathology. Sketchy is a great company. They make amazing resources. I mean, I know a ton of people that I have tutored and have done extremely well using Sketchy Micro. Many people love Sketchy Micro, Sketchy Farm, Sketchy Path. Those are newer resources. Some people like them, but I feel like their most popular resource is Sketchy Micro. A lot of people love Sketchy Micro. Sketchy Micro, yes, I really did not use Sketchy Micro, but trust me, like, I've tutored tons and tons of people that use that resource and did extremely well with it. So, if you're the person that has a lot of trouble memorizing stuff, Sketchy may not be the worst idea in the world. Although, I'll just highlight one thing with Sketchy. Try to make sure that you understand things. Just try to put some understanding behind those Sketchy videos, right? Sketchy, again, it's a great... I sort of think of Sketchy as almost like being like Anki in a sense. It's very good for helping you remember information, but it's not necessarily very good for helping you understand information. So I will encourage you. Yes, there are fancy pictures and fancy mnemonics and all those things are great. They have helped thousands of people to learn information. I mean, to memorize information. Let me use my word inappropriately. To memorize information, but it may not necessarily be the best at helping you understand information. Now, and then there are some books. Actually, let me talk about Firecracker, because Firecracker is another thing a lot of people use. So Firecracker is a great resource. Basically, if all you used was Firecracker and probably did not touch any other resources, you would essentially accumulate all the knowledge. Not all, but again, close to perfect knowledge of all you need to know for the USMLE Step 1. Firecracker is an amazing resource. It's a soul-crushing resource. It requires a lot of discipline. If you're a person that is very disciplined, if you're a person that is a big proponent of delayed gratification, and you're the person that, again, you can basically like concoct the plan and be super disciplined following that plan every day for like 2 years, Firecracker is a great resource. I'm telling you this, Firecracker is a phenomenal resource if you just use it appropriately. So most people, when they use Firecracker, right, they do the reading and then they do the questions, right, longitudinally for a long period of time, right? The thing is, let me suggest another plan. It's risky, but it works really well if, again, you are disciplined. The thing is, Firecracker is a great resource. The reason that Firecracker does not necessarily work out for many people is just the discipline aspect. If you're not a disciplined person, Firecracker is probably not something you should use. I mean, if you're disciplined, I feel like you can get so much, like a ton, like a lot more than you envisage out of Firecracker. So let me give you an example. If you're disciplined and let's say you're first year, you're starting, blah, 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 I'll encourage you, Firecracker, great resource. You just need to start early and you need to be disciplined. Now, some people may say, Divine, is there any way, let's assume I have never used Firecracker ever before, right? And I'm going into like a lengthy dedicated period, let's say like a 9-week dedicated period, for example. Is there any way I could start Firecracker now and get benefit from it? My bold answer to that is yes. So let me explain how. The thing is, many people think that Firecracker is valuable just for the questions. That's not the case. Firecracker is actually also valuable for the readings. Okay, for the readings. It basically creates like almost like a textbook with tons of questions. So if, again, this is a plan that, again, very few people I know have used this, but it's actually a plan that can make you wildly successful, again, if you're disciplined, right? If you're the kind of person that can acquire information by reading, and you want to use Firecracker as the cornerstone of your dedicated study period, you can basically use Firecracker as a textbook. And you essentially just sit down and cover like many topics every day without doing the questions. So what do I mean by that? Basically, what I mean is you sit down and you can say, okay, you know what? In one day, I'm just going to do the readings for like 50 Firecracker topics, right? Like read it slowly, try to understand it, because they're actually going to like explanations, like try to understand it, and then do like Q banks and everything that, again, that I'll talk about shortly, to sort of like test my knowledge of what I just studied. So that's one way you can use it, right? So like just use it as a textbook, read the information, and then do questions from like UWorld, for example. Okay. The only thing is, you just need to make sure that as you're making that pass, again, you are disciplined to read an appropriate number of topics every day so that you can get through like all of it in, say, for example, like 3 to 4 weeks. And then you can then say, okay, then I'll go ahead and pick up first aid and use it as my review after using Firecracker as a learner resource. So I can tell, I'll tell you this, Firecracker is a good learner resource if you just use it in a certain way. Okay. And again, you can study like literally during your dedicated period, but you need to study it early, and you probably don't have the time to walk your way through the questions. But if you can just do the readings, you can almost treat Firecracker like a textbook. It is extremely comprehensive to step one. In fact, I would say Firecracker is probably, and again, this is again based on my experiences. Firecracker is probably one of the most comprehensive step one resources that are out there. But again, it doesn't work for many people, but if you're disciplined, it can work for you. Again, if you notice, I'm saying DIT, like you can use DIT and get above the 90th percentile. You can use just first aid, get above the 90th percentile. You can use boards and beyond only, get above the 90th percentile. Again, these are like learner/review resources. You can use any of these resources I'm mentioning and get above the 90th percentile, but you just need to, one, make sure that you're the right person for that resource, and two, you need to make sure that you use that resource the right way, right? There are people that have a good conceptual understanding, but they use first aid the wrong way, and then they don't get to their goals. Okay, so again, you need to be the right person for that resource, and you need to use that resource with the right plan. If you can sort of like pay attention to those things, you can see that you can do pretty well on many of these exams with resources that people are like, does that resource even work? So again, just pay attention to those things, and you should be well on your way to success. And then I will just go ahead and mention some books, right? So, for example, many of you have probably heard about this book, USMLE Step 1 Secrets. There is another closely related book. In fact, I think it's written by the same person, Crush Step 1. Those are actually very good books to learn the information. The only thing is, those books are not comprehensive. But if you're like, man, I need a book that can help me understand certain things and is sort of like good for understanding most of the topic, so you're like, oh, instead of using like one book for this, one book for that, one book for this, one book for that, these books are actually pretty good to like just get yourself up to speed in terms of understanding concepts before then jumping to like first aid or something, for example, to start learning the minutiae and all the nitty-gritty details. And I mean, there are other books, right, that are there are other things that can help you for step one, but I think I would reserve my discussion to this for review/learning. I'll talk about like some other like resources, but I'll talk about them after I've talked about my permutations, right? So again, first two permutations are these review/learning resources I just talked about. And then the third thing is a Q bank, right? So in terms of Q banks, UWorld is gold standard, right? Pretty much everyone uses UWorld. UWorld is a great resource. It's a phenomenal resource. You should probably use UWorld if you want to do well on the exam. But I will say one thing with UWorld. UWorld is very good at teaching people how to overthink, right? So many times UWorld will write questions and they just lay all these traps for you. And then many people translate that to mean that, you know what, man, on my exam, I know they're going to try to lay many traps for me in my questions. That is true. The MBME does that. But the thing is, most MBME questions, and again, you may not believe me on this, but I'm telling you this from, again, my own personal experience, and again, from tutoring and teaching thousands of people. Many MBME questions are written in a classic common presentation of a given concept. I mean, the reason many people find these tests to be hard is, one, they have bad test taking strategy, or two, their knowledge base is just not as good as it should be, right? So again, I will encourage you. Yes, UWorld is great. You should use UWorld. I mean, I use UWorld. UWorld is a great resource. But the thing is, while you're using UWorld, try not to extract the notion that every question is out to trick you, or becoming an overthinker with questions. That is one way UWorld can burn you, and that is just something you don't want to take with you from UWorld. Okay, that's something you don't want to take with you from UWorld. Now, but again, UWorld is probably the best QBank that exists for studying for the USMLE Step 1 exam. It's not the best question source, but it's the best QBank. The best question source are the MBME questions. That I can tell you 100% without shadow of doubt. Now, the next QBank on my list is Kaplan, right? So the Kaplan QBank, again, it's not a popular option amongst people, but the Kaplan QBank is actually pretty good. Yeah, do they have some questions that are not great? Yes, every QBank has questions that are not great. But the thing is, Kaplan is particularly good for physiology, right? Physiology and pharmacology. If you're the kind of person that needs thoughtful questions that will really force you to think about stuff, again, UWorld does that with pretty much all its questions. But I will say, especially for pharmacology and physiology, the Kaplan QBank is actually pretty good. Many of their questions and the explanations really force you to think. Again, you probably get many of the questions wrong, but trust me, the learning is quite worth it. But again, you don't need to use multiple QBanks. If you use only UWorld, that is fine. Okay, there are many people who have tutored that use only UWorld and they absolutely destroyed their exams. Okay, you don't need to use just Kaplan. You don't need to use UWorld and Kaplan and this and that. No, you can use only UWorld. Kind of risky, but you can actually use only Kaplan and still do just fine. Okay, again, just pick one thing that works well for you and just run with it. Okay, but I'm sort of trying to talk about the strengths and weaknesses of each resource based on, again, my own evaluation. Again, my own evaluation of things may be completely way off, right? So again, take everything I say with a grain of salt. And then the USMLE-RX QBank, it's a great QBank. Again, if you want, basically it's like almost like first aid in a question format. It doesn't cover everything in first aid, right? But it's pretty great for questioning. Or say, for example, you just read a first aid chapter and you just want to go through that first aid again in like a question format. The RX QBank is actually not bad for that purpose, especially for like just, again, like kind of like recognizing buzzwords and all that stuff. But I'll say in general, the UWorld QBank is probably the best written QBank of all that you have out there. There's this other newish QBank that it's making its way out there, Emboss. So Emboss, it's a QBank that has come out fairly recently. I probably will not recommend using it as your only QBank. I will say, for example, if you're using UWorld and then like Emboss as an adjunct, that's not a bad idea. But saying that, oh, you know what, I'm gonna diss every other QBank and just use like Emboss, for example, I don't know if that's, again, it may work for some people. You never know. But I just will probably not recommend that as a prudent strategy. Now, in terms of practice tests, so the fourth part of my permutation, right? They are the MBME practice tests. You really should do all of them. If you don't do those exams, you're probably shooting yourself in the foot. I will highly, highly encourage you, do all the MBME practice exams. And do them from old to new, right? So do the oldest one and then work your way up to the new one closer to your exam. And then you should also do the UWorld self-assessments, right? So there's two of those exams, UWorld self-assessment 1 and 2. You should do those. And then you really should do the free 120, right? So the free 120 literally is a set of, it's really not 120, it's more like I think 117 questions. There's like 117 questions. Usually I recommend people do those like 3 to 5 days before their tests. They're relatively easy. They highlight a lot of high yield concepts that you may see on your exam, okay? And there's this website made by a fellow radiologist. His name is Ben White. He has explanations to those free exams, right? So I'll encourage you, like after you take the exams, probably just go on his website and just go ahead and scroll through his explanations to many of those questions. Now, in terms of other resources, right? So Anki, right? I mean, I can't make a podcast without talking about Anki. Again, Anki, if you look at my... in fact, let me just go ahead and say this right now. If you have a free 1 hour somewhere, I will encourage you to go and listen to one of my previous podcasts on the central dogma of studying. Listening to that podcast will really help you get your thinking right with regards to how you should study, just in general, okay? It's a one-hour podcast, but they're going to like I won't call it the theory of studying. I will talk, just think of it as where I discuss concepts on how you should study. I will encourage you to consider listening to that podcast if you have the time. Now, one thing I will say here is that Anki is good. Anki is great. There are many people that have succeeded with Anki, but there's a ton of people that have also not succeeded with Anki because they are using Anki wrong. Okay, the thing is, Anki is a good memorization tool. Okay, Anki is not a great understanding tool. You need to understand something first before you try to memorize it. There are many great decks out there. There is Zanki, there is Brosencephalon, and all that stuff. And again, those are things that, again, if you work through and completely memorize everything in those resources, great. But the thing is, if you also don't understand many of those things in those resources, you will not do well on your exams. Okay, again, brute force Anki is amazing, but I will encourage you to try to have the understanding down before just jumping into memorization. Because here's why. The thing is, you probably know those people that said, I've done 10,000 Anki cards, but I'm still doing poorly on my practice tests. Why is that? The reasoning behind that, the thing is, you have the information on your fingertips, don't get me wrong. But the thing is, having that information on your fingertips and being able to abstract that information from questions are two different things. The thing is, when you have understanding, then that knowledge that you've memorized, it's easy to see it in the midst of distractors, right? So I sort of think of it this way, right? Let's assume you're going to a foreign country and you've memorized all, like a list of, say, for example, you've never come to the US before. You memorize the list of 50 states in the US and you memorize like zip codes and everything. Great, right? You know a lot about the US, fine. Right, but the thing is, you may, if they drop you in the US, you'll probably still be completely lost because you just don't have an understanding of the US as a country, right? So that's the same thing with questions, right? If you know everything in the world, you've memorized it brute force, but you don't have that foundation of studying, of understanding, then when the NBME writes a question, you may not necessarily be able to see that question in the context of all the stuff you've memorized, right? The thing is, you need context to be able to approach questions, and that context comes from having good understanding. Again, this is one of those things I'll go out on a limb on. If you're just trying to memorize, are there people that reach their potential by just memorizing stuff? Yes, but those people are very few and far between. Right, the people that get in the 260s, 270s, the 250s, the high scoring ranges, I can tell you that those people have solid understanding, and then they took the time to go ahead and master and learn the minutiae and all those memorization details. So again, Anki is a phenomenal resource. In fact, I will probably encourage more people to use Anki, but I'm also trying to encourage more people to try to understand and then use Anki to repeat that material you have understood. Now, another thing is, see this series of books, like the BRS books. So if you have a difficulty understanding material, the BRS books are great for helping you get that understanding, right? So for example, BRS Physiology is a great book, right? It's a great book. If you really want to understand physiology, it's a great book for that purpose. It has a lot of very awesome questions at the back of each of the books that can really help you like sort of nail through that material. In fact, I'll tell you this. BRS Physiology, there's a big one and there's a small one. The small one is like 330 pages. The big one is like 600 pages. If you're like, I just want to try understanding this resource, I'll encourage you, try the small Constanzo book first. If you don't get the understanding from reading that small Constanzo chapter, then go for the big one. Okay, the big one has more details, but the small one, really, I'll say for most people, they can understand by using the small version of the book. But if you try, say, for example, you read the Reno chapter in that small book, it's not cutting it for you, then you can consider trying the bigger book. Now, for immunology specifically, there's this book known as How the Immune System Works, right? It's a short book. If you're very motivated, you can read it in like 2 days. But if you read that book and understand everything in it, you will probably be like an immunology master for your USMLE exams. Another resource, the Kaplan lecture notes. So Kaplan, the company, has lecture notes for essentially every subject on the USMLEs. Again, if your foundation is very weak and you hate audiovisual resources, so basically like Boards and Beyond, stuff like that, and you're like, I'm a person that can sit down and by reading I can digest, those Kaplan lecture notes are actually not bad for that purpose. I'll say probably use the Pathoma book or the Golian book for reading, for pathology, but I'll say for pretty much every other thing, those Kaplan lecture notes are actually pretty clutch for those purposes. And one other thing I will say, right? I mean, I'm making a podcast, so I'm going to talk about my podcast, right? So the thing is, again, take everything I say with a grain of salt. I think my podcasts are pretty good. And I'll say that there are certain areas in terms of studying for step one that I will say that I have pretty comprehensive material for those things, right? So for example, I will say that for biochem, like metabolism, my podcast is probably all you need for your USMLEs. Same warning goes for renal. I have pretty comprehensive renal material on my podcast website. I mean, there are even like YouTube videos. If you go to my website, you can click and you can get to the videos on those topics. A ton of micro, so like the viruses, the fungi, most of the bacteria, I cover them really well on my podcast website. Pharmacology for the USMLE exams, I'll say probably like 90 to 95% of the pharm you need to know for your USMLE exams, I cover all of them on my website in podcasts. This is one of those things I can almost promise you. Pharmacology is very well covered on my website. If you listen, yeah, there are multiple podcasts, but if you listen to those podcasts, take good notes, commit those things to memory, you really know pretty much all the pharm you need for your USMLE exams. I mean, like even for micro, like the antibiotics, I have like 3 or 4 podcasts on antibiotics. Those are probably all you need to know with regards to micro pharm for your USMLE exams. Now, other stuff there, right? So like neuro and psych. So the thing is, the neuro and psych material I have, I target them more to the shelf exams and to step two. But here's what I will tell you. If you listen to those podcasts for neuro, in fact, I have a video for psych, I can promise you that you'll learn a good chunk, almost, I'll say, probably like 70 to 80% of what you need to know for those subject areas for the USMLE exams. And I mean, as time goes on in the upcoming weeks, months, and whatnot, I'll make more podcasts that cover the other areas that I'm not saying, oh, I have complete material for this and that. But I will tell you this, neuro, psych, pharm, metabolism, renal, micro, I have a ton of good stuff on my website for those. And again, please don't necessarily believe everything I'm saying. Just pick out 1 or 2 of my podcasts, listen to them, right? Decide for yourself if you like them, right? Again, I suspect that you will like them, as I've gotten feedback from tons of people, both for step one, for step two, step three, and whatnot. So try them out first, see if you like them. Try 1 or 2, right? If you like them, then I will encourage you, for these areas I've mentioned, you can get very good learning from them. Because again, my podcasts, my mindset that I pursue when I make those podcasts is, I don't make them to just give you facts. No, I give you the facts you need to know, but I go into explaining them. And then I sort of think of it as like the Golian technique. I try to explain, okay, this is how that material will be tested. This is how that material may be tested. And I try to integrate it with other fields of learning. Now, Let's go into some more. These are just more like thoughts on how you should approach the exam, right? So the first thing is, so again, some of these things are unpopular, right? But again, going based on my experience, and again, the experience I've accumulated from advising people, seeing people that were not doing well in their study period, and then we talked, and then they got better, and all that stuff. I'll encourage you again, take everything with a grain of salt, but just hear me out. You may pick out one or two good things from these pieces of advice. So my first advice is study before you do questions, right? So this is the reverse of the what you'll hear on many, many websites, and you hear from many people. Many people say, oh, you know what? I learn well from doing questions. Yeah, you can learn well from doing questions, but I'm willing to opine that you can learn even better if you study and then do questions over what you studied. The thing is, studying before you do questions is probably one of the most efficient means of using a dedicated study period. Because the thing is, when you're doing questions, right, and you're like, I'll just read the explanations and I should be good to go with that. The thing you may be doing is, in the moment, right, in that present moment, you're like, ooh, I am learning so much from this explanation in U World. Oh, this is phenomenal. This is amazing. I'm getting so much into my brain. It's just flying and sucking into my cerebral cortex and all that stuff. The thing is, chances are what may be happening in a good extent is you're understanding it in the moment, but you're also memorizing that explanation. You're not necessarily doing as much learning as you could be doing if you studied first and then reinforced by doing questions, okay? The thing is, I believe I go into more detail on this in my Central Dogma podcast, so I don't keep beating about the bush, but I'll tell you this. If you read and understand like a resource first and then go into questions, one, you won't spend copious amounts of time going through questions. Two, you won't spend like anything you get wrong will become more meaningful to you because you're like, man, I studied this thing. I'm still getting this question wrong. You will then begin to see errors in your thinking that you can correct with those practice questions. And the thing is, if you have a solid knowledge base going into test taking, you pick up more in the realm of test taking strategy, doing questions when you have a knowledge base to boot. But if you have like no knowledge base, it's very hard to pick up on good test taking strategy as you are taking and reviewing questions. Again, I'm not going to keep beating about the bush here. Listen to my Central Dogma podcast of studying. You will get more of my thoughts on this, but I will encourage you. It's an unpopular opinion, but I can tell you that studying first and then doing questions in tandem is a very good study strategy. And it's a very efficient study strategy. Because one thing that burns people's hours during the dedicated period is they say, Divine, I spent 9 to 10 hours just doing my UWorld questions for the day. You really should not be spending that much time if you spent the hours learning the information, right? And the thing, I mean, many people don't realize is there's only so much you can learn from a QBank, right? A QBank cannot teach you everything you need to know for an exam. That is just deceiving yourself, to be honest with you. I mean, the greatest form of deceit is self-deceit. You know the truth in your heart, but you're still deceiving yourself. The thing is, QBanks, right, they focus on like, oh, this is the highest yield material to learn. This is this and this is that. The thing is, probably one of the more efficient means of picking up information initially. Notice, again, pay attention to my wording. I'm not saying the most efficient means of picking up information all the time is through questions. That is not true. There is a time where doing questions represents the most efficient means of picking up information. For certain exams, doing questions is a great way to pick up that information. But I'll tell you that for many subjects, especially for the preclinical subjects, reading first and then doing questions is probably the most efficient way of picking up a more complete, comprehensive breadth of knowledge. Now, so With that out of the way, let's go to my next advice, right? So my next advice relates to doing, so this is again very unpopular, but again, I'll explain my reasoning. And here is the advice, right? So I will encourage you to do questions in tutor mode in non-random fashion. So people may say, Divine, no, this is ridiculous. Everyone has told me to do Q banks in timed random mode, like random. Great. That is not a good strategy. And again, I may be way off here. I may be completely wrong, but I can almost encourage you that that is not a good or efficient study strategy. The thing is, do you need some kind of randomization with questions? Absolutely, you do. But that randomization, I will say it's probably more appropriate to come from the MBME practice tests and the UWorld self-assessments. Because one thing many people do not realize is that QBanks, regardless of how polished it is, regardless of who wrote the question, QBanks are not the best representation of the question styling of an exam. That's one. Two, when you do questions in non-random fashion, you are essentially not studying with a focus. What do I mean by that? So let's say you do a UWorld block, completely random, 40 questions. The thing is, what is basically happening under those circumstances is that in one block, you may be learning micro and pharm and immuno and cardio and renal and pulm and metabolism. Yeah, that's good. You're like, oh man, I'm integrating so much. But the thing is, what is usually happening for those people is that they are learning discrete pockets of information, right? The thing is, don't you think it makes more sense and is more efficient to, you know what? I'm going to, for example, wake up in the morning, read the first aid cardiology chapter, and then after that, I'm going to go ahead and do cardio questions for the next like 1 or 2 days. The thing is, when you go through that iterative process, you'll be a cardio master in like 2 days, and you'll feel like your knowledge of cardio is great, solid, on good footing, right? But when you're like chasing this, at the end of the day, you're like, man, I learned a lot today, but I don't feel like there is this one thing that I learned really well. The thing is, don't take this to mean that, oh, Divine is saying that I should not go and do random questions. No. Say, for example, you've taken one good Q bank, and as you're doing that Q bank by section, you've also been studying by section. Right? And let's say you're like 4 weeks into your dedicated period. You feel like your knowledge base is amazing. You feel like you know like 80 to 90% of the first aid information really well. Then if you want to say, for example, you know what, let me start randomizing questions from here on out. That is prudent. But I'm telling you, begin of your dedicated period, especially if your knowledge base is not like solid and you want to start out randomizing questions, I'm telling you, again, I know it's an unpopular opinion on things, but I'm telling you that for a great majority of people, and this is, again, coming from someone that understands a lot about learning theory, and not just learning theory in the context of, oh, the MCAT or college exams or whatever, but learning theory in the context of the USMLE exams especially, right? I can almost promise you that you gain a lot more from doing questions by section, okay? Because again, it represents probably the most efficient use of your study time. If you keep chasing too many directions by doing random questions with Q banks that are not necessarily the best representation of what your real exam will look like, then I will tell you that, one, you're being very inefficient, and two, you may end up not learning as deeply or as richly as you could have if you did things by section. Now, the whole question of should I do things timed or untimed is completely up to you. Pretty much every QBank I've done it in tutor mode, And occasionally I do it timed. Occasionally I do it untimed. Timed, untimed, it does not matter. But I'll say that pretty much every QBank I have used, I do those questions in tutor mode. But whenever, again, whenever I'm taking practice tests, like the MBME practice tests, the UOL self-assessments, I always do them under like perfect test-taking conditions. But QBanks, I always do them, almost as a rule, I always do them tutor, and many times I do them untimed. For some situations, I do them untimed tutor, right? But that tutor is like a common denominator. I almost always do questions in tutor mode. Because the thing is, I've noticed, again, just from myself and from many people that I've tutored, I've advised and everything, many people, they do a set of 40 questions and say, okay, I'll go back and review those 40 questions. It's really hard for them to do. But there's nothing like doing a question now, seeing the answer right now, reviewing it right now, and writing down whatever notes you want to write right now, right? Again, many of you have probably fallen into this trap where you're like, ah, I did these two blocks of questions, but man, it's so crushing to go back and review everything. No, if you just do it tutor by question, right, you basically eliminate that problem. And again, I go into more detail on this in my Central Dogma podcast. Now, next thing is, next, I guess, concept is many people actually underestimate the value of studying, right? Many people underestimate the value of studying. You see many people that say, you know what, for my dedicated period, I'm just going to do like questions. Like I hear many people say this, all I'm going to do is, they tell students even, all you should do is questions. All you should do is questions. All you should do is questions and you will crush your exam. No. That is not a great strategy. The thing is, if you're saying all I'm going to do is questions and your knowledge base is phenomenal going in, then I'll say, yeah, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. That is absolutely what you should do. But if, for example, let's say you were like below average for most of your preclinical subjects, your knowledge base is not as strong as it should be, and you're saying that your dedicated period is going to be like 90% questions, I can almost promise you that you're setting yourself up to fail, okay? Here's why. The thing is, again, QBanks are a great means of learning, but QBanks, I'll tell you this. You know what? Yes, I've been saying I would suggest, I will highly encourage you, go back and listen to my Central Dogma podcast. You will see me say more about this there. But the thing is, QBanks, you cannot learn everything from QBanks, right? QBanks are good testing tools. They're also good learning tools, but you need to study. Studying is really where you can learn a lot of information in a fairly efficient format. Again, don't take this to say Divine says don't do questions. No, that is an absolute lie. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if you take the time to study and then you take the time to do questions and review them thoroughly, you can do really well on exams, right? But the thing is, you cannot do one without the other. Those things cannot be done in a vacuum. There are certain exams, don't get me wrong, that, oh, if you just do questions, you'll do well. But I am opining here, again, take everything I say with a grain of salt, that that is not the best strategy for the USMLE exams. In fact, I will say not the MBMEs specifically. In general, if you study and then do questions and review them well, you can do really well on these tests. I mean, like, literally, there are people that I have worked with as a tutor that they literally, like, their first few weeks of their dedicated period, they were probably doing, like, 30 UOL questions a day. And then they were spending, like, 70-80% of their day literally studying. That was, like, literally all they did. Literally all they did. And say, for example, like, they had, like, a 7-8-week dedicated study period. And they probably studied for like, they probably spent like 70% of their time like going through boards and beyond, DIT, blah, 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 for those first 4 or 5 weeks. And then they took a practice test after that first 4 or 5 weeks and they got like a 250 something or a 260 something. That is with probably having completed only like 20 to 30% of your world. Yes, some of them ultimately went on to like get to like 60% of your world or 70% of your world or 100% of your world before they took their tests. But I'm telling you this, like there are people that literally the bulk, I'll say like their dedicated period, like the first few weeks, at least before they took a practice test, was like 70-80% studying. And they ended up like, they took their first practice test, they're like, wow, divine, I got a 250, I got a 260. And you're like, wait, I have only done 20% of your world. How am I doing this well? I'm telling you this, there's a lot of value in actually studying. Right, I'm not saying, oh, spend 100% of your dedicated period studying and then not doing questions. No, that's a bad strategy, right? You should do questions. But the thing is, questions are not the end all be all of a dedicated period. You really should spend probably an equal percent of your time actually studying and committing details to memory. Because the thing is, on many of these MBME questions, they are not out to trick you. Many times, they give you the classic common presentation of things. Those classic common presentations, yeah, you will pick up on many of them from QBanks, but you will pick up on a more comprehensive amount of those classic common presentations, including pathophysiology, by actually studying. Now, next thing is, and I mean, some people say, oh, Divine, I know someone that just did QBanks and they got 270s. Right. I will encourage you to go to those people and just get a little more backstory from them. And you will see that in many cases, those people have a phenomenal base of knowledge in comparison with that QBank whatever that you're going through. Yeah, if you go through three QBanks, bloody, bloody, blah, all that stuff, sure, you can do well on your USMLEs. But the thing is, many of those people that get in the 260s, 270s, 250s, and you're like, oh, they tell you that, oh, all they use is QBanks. That is generally, for the most part, not true. Many of those people have a solid knowledge base. They either accumulated that solid knowledge base during their dedicated periods or during their first, like, 2 years of med school. And I'll say some more things about that as we go along. Now, if you feel super weak in something, I will encourage you to find a good but succinct resource to understand that information before, again, jumping to a review resource like First Aid, for example. Now, let me give you a potential algorithm for how you should study, right? Again, I go into more detail on this in my Central Dogma podcast, but I'll encourage you first, understand. And then after that, read a review, not learning, a review resource. And then after that, do questions. And then after that, repeat that review resource more, as many times as is possible. If you basically follow this pathway, you should be able to do really well on your exams. Okay. And again, get the understanding down, get the repetition in, and have detailed, nuanced analysis of questions. Okay. That is essentially the cornerstone of any successful strategy. I mean, any successful study strategy. And the thing is, while you're studying, ask yourself, how can this information be tested? That is actually a very powerful way to learn material. Now, while you're doing practice tests, please, 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 I'm begging you, even if you don't do this with QBanks, please do this with your practice tests. If you don't do this, you're wasting your practice tests. After doing practice exams, please, 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 spend time reviewing those tests. In fact, this is probably one of the things that has helped me the most as a test taker. Whenever I take a practice exam, especially the MBMEs, those are pure gold, I always go back to review every single question in great excruciating detail. And the thing is, whenever I'm reviewing questions, I always do this. I basically ask myself, okay, do I know the concept that is behind this question? That's one. Two, I ask myself, is there any test-taking strategy I can pick up from this question? Three, is there any distractor? Basically, I always ask myself, why did I get this question wrong? Or why did I get this question right? Or is there any way I could have gotten this question without even having the knowledge required to answer the question in the first place? That's the kind of analysis I do with pretty much all the questions I expose myself to. Especially, I may not necessarily do this with UWorld or with Kaplan or whatever, but this with the MBMEs, I am very I don't want to use bad words, but I'm very detailed when I review my MBMEs. You can get a lot of learning done with these with those MBME exams. I probably spend more time reviewing tests than I do actually taking them, especially the MBMEs. Now, I can tell you this, if you use your MBME practice tests well, you can learn a ton from them. You can identify patterns. You can become a better test taker, just seriously, from reviewing those tests appropriately. Now, when you're doing questions, when you're doing UWorld, right? Here's one good time waster for many people on during their dedicated periods. You see people concocting 300, 400 page documents, right, of notes that they are taking from QBanks, right? That is a bad, bad, bad strategy. You see some people, they're literally transcribing UWorld, right? They're literally transcribing UWorld. The unfortunate thing is many of those things they are transcribing has already been written very nicely in some textbook or in first aid or in the PowerPoints that come with boards and beyond, right? The thing is, all that time you're spending transcribing, one, is wasted time. Yeah, no. It's not necessarily, let me put it this way, because I know some people are probably like flipping out with what I'm saying right now. The thing is, that time you're spending transcribing assiduously is time that you probably could have spent studying and repeating that material multiple times to get it into your head. The thing is, whenever I do practice exams, especially like UWorld, if, for example, I get a question right and I understand why I got it right, I just read the answer explanation. I literally take no notes on that question. But if there is a question I get wrong or a question I get right because I guessed, right, or like this new concept that I've not seen anywhere, I try to read the explanation first. So the thing is, you see some people as they're reading the explanation, they're taking notes. No, that's not the way to go about things. I read the explanation first, cover up that explanation, and ask myself, Divine, is there a way I can express the key concepts from this wall of text in terms of answer explanations that I just read in 1 to 2 succinct sentences? I try to sit down, force myself to put everything together into one sentence, and then I write down that one sentence for that question, right? So you may see some people, they have 10, 20 pages worth of notes for an exam. You're like, man, how is all the high yield stuff you need to know in those 10 to 20 pages? That's because they took notes the smart way. In fact, the good thing is UWorld actually has a resource, like a notes feature that you can use while you're doing questions. Although if your computer crashes or your UWorld subscription expires or something crazy happens, you may lose all those notes. So I'll encourage you, just probably get a pen and paper or a notebook. And again, no more than 1 to 2 sentences for a question, even if it's a question you get wrong, okay? Limiting yourself to 1 to 2 sentences will force you to put everything together and abstract what is the most important. And you may say, but Divine, but there's so much good stuff in those explanations. The reason you're saying that and the reason you feel the need to write a ton of stuff is because you have not necessarily studied. That's why you see I tell people, study before doing questions. If you study, you know where the information is. You know, oh, all this is in first aid. Because think about it. Why spend hours and hours and hours and hours writing down information that is already written somewhere in some book that you can just refer to and just read it off yourself? Because many times these people that generate these 300 to 400 page behemoths, they never go back to go through that resource multiple times as they should. So I will encourage you, consider using this strategy when you're doing QBanks and reviewing your questions from QBanks. Now, my next piece of advice, changing plans. The thing is, before you start your dedicated period, I'll encourage you, speak with someone that is knowledgeable with these issues, like an upperclassman or a tutor or something. Let that, or even if you don't speak with anyone, even if you're doing this by yourself, do a realistic assessment. Where am I right now in terms of my knowledge base? A good way to actually assess that is to take a baseline MBME. Just sort of figure out where you are, right? Ask yourself, where am I right now? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? How do I study? Blah, blah, blah. Those are all things. If you figure out, make a solid plan. The thing is, once you make a solid plan, this is where discipline comes in. You need to be disciplined to stick with that plan, right? I mean, obviously, if you use that plan for like 4 weeks and it's not working, you're like, I'm not learning, my test scores are not budging, I will encourage you, then make changes. But you see people, they use one study plan for 3 days, and then they jump to another one 2 days later. And then they jump to this one, and then they jump to this one. And then they get to, and they're like, wait, I have just 1 week to my exam. They're like wondering, whoa, what happened? How did I get to this situation? The reason they got to that situation is they kept changing plans, or they kept trying to copy what, oh, they found, let's say they were studying for 1 week, and then they found this friend using this one resource that, oh, they haven't even used, even if it's out of their plan, and then they panic and start using it. Those are things that kill your dedicated study period. So again, I'll encourage you, make a solid plan that works for you as a person, and stick with that plan. As long as you make a plan that includes those four permutations I talked about earlier on, you should be able to do really well on your tests, as long as you're disciplined and you use them appropriately. Now, another thing is, again, I will encourage you, before your dedicated period, just listen to my podcast on the central dogma of studying. You can learn a lot from that. Now, what if you're an auditory learner, right? So there are certain people that just absolutely hate reading books, right? There are people that absolutely hate reading books. Or maybe they love reading books, but just medical texts just send them to sleep. Or they don't learn as effectively from that. If you're an auditory learner, I will encourage you, find a good video resource. Boards and Beyond, Doctors in Training. Those are great resources. Watch those videos. As you're watching those videos, generate your own notes on them. It's so crushing. It takes a very large amount of time. But if you're an auditory learner, that is a great plan. Like literally, again, there are people I know that all they did was, or the plans, let's just say the plans I suggested to them, were plans that involved them using one of these video resources, watching every single video, and making notes on every single video. And then they read those notes multiple times, did questions, and they crushed their exams. I absolutely will tell you that those are things you can do. Okay? So, if for example, right, you're like, oh, you know what? I love audiovisual learning, and you take Boards and Beyond, or you take DIT, watch each video, make notes, and then use those notes as your first aid, and not even touch the real first aid at all, that is absolutely fine. Again, I'm telling you that there are people that I have tutored, there are people that I have advised, that have used that strategy, and have done extremely well on their exams. So it's a strategy that certainly works, okay? You just have to be disciplined, right? You just have to be disciplined and thorough. So don't say, oh, I did this with 20% of DIT, and oh, I got a 200. How did that happen? Well, you just use 20%, okay? If you're very detailed and you're very thorough, you can get to the destination you want. Now, in fact, I mean, for me, right? I mean, I tell many people, I'm an auditory learner. Yes, I'm very good at reading books, but I much prefer a good lecture, a good audiovisual lecture. That's why I'm creating this podcast website in the first place. I really love listening and watching videos. I can learn a lot and I can retain a lot from just going through that. Although many times what will end up happening is I'll watch a video or a lecture to understand, and then I'll just watch that video like many more times at higher speeds, just as my sort of like Anki way of repeating that information. And I still get the same effect. I still end up doing, thankfully, pretty well on exams. So I will encourage you, if you're an auditory learner, you can use what I'm just, what I just now suggested. Now, one thing people do is they say, oh, Divine, should I do 3 passes through your world? That's probably not a good idea. I'll encourage you that if you've used your world once, you can go back and redo your wrong questions, or better yet, add another Q bank, right? So instead of doing 50 passes through your world, I'll highly recommend maybe use your world once, use it right the first time, okay? And then go ahead and add another QBank like Kaplan or USMLERX. Now, just other quick things, right? So these are just thoughts that make sense, right? So one thing is the free 120. You should certainly do those. I already talked about that. I will encourage you once in your prep, probably like 2 weeks to your exam, try doing the back-to-back, right? Because your real exam is 8 hours, right? It's 7 blocks. So maybe do like 2 UWorld self-assessments in one day, or do like 1 UWorld self-assessment and 1 MBME practice exam to simulate a full-length day. And then I will encourage you to exercise, right? Mental health is important because really a dedicated period is a great time to stress eat. Really, I feel like exercise, one, makes you feel good, and two, I mean, you've heard of the endorphins, you're medical students, you know all that stuff, but exercise, like daily exercise, makes you almost makes you a disciplined person. I mean, even there's a part of the Bible that says that bodily exercise profiteth little. Yes, the profit is little, but there's like actual, like legit profit from exercising. So I'll encourage you, establish that daily discipline. One, it will help your mental health, and two, it will help you remain disciplined as you go through your dedicated study period. Now, obviously, you should try to study in a place where you can learn without being disturbed, right? So if you know that your family, the more hands-on people that will prevent you from studying as well as you should, then stay back at your med school and study. At the end of your dedicated period, you can go visit your family and whatever. And before you start your third year after your dedicated period, I'll encourage you, take like a week off, right? Get your brain set. Even if it's just 2 days, if you're the workaholic, even if it's just 2 days, take some time off, right? In general, you don't want to like finish your dedicated period and literally the next day start your third year, right? That's probably not very good for your mental well-being. And while you're studying, one thing I would definitely, I mean, I'll say this, one, as motivation, and two, as like what is just true, is this. If you study hard for your step one exam and you study to do well on your step one exam, you're setting yourself up to do really well on step two CK, on your step three exam, for your entire clinical career, and for your shelf exams in third year. I'm telling you this, the best prep for third year is doing well on step one. You see some people, they say, oh, I'm very good with talking to patients and everything. Yes, that is true. You need to be good with talking to patients and all that stuff to do well in third year. But I promise you, if you have a bad knowledge base, you're not doing yourself any good. A complete clinician is one that has a good knowledge base and has good bedside manner. Those are two things you want to be able to tie together. I'm telling you this, like you can just check, right? People that do well on step one, invariably do well on step two CK, invariably do well on step three, invariably do well on their shelf exams, okay? Yes, it's a different kind of thinking for third year and step two CK, but many times that knowledge base you acquired for step one, even if you've forgotten a lot of it, will still help you tremendously down the line on tests, on the wards, and for the rest of your clinical career. Now, if you're not hitting the goals you want, talk to someone early, right? So again, talk to an upperclassman, talk to a professor, talk to a tutor, talk to someone that, the thing is, let me just put it this way. There are many professors or there are many supposedly knowledgeable people that they probably knew how things worked 20, 30 years ago, but they may not necessarily know how things work now. So I'll encourage you, there is probably someone at your med school or someone that you know really well that has done really well on tests, has a lot of experience with like test prep, test taking, that you can speak to, run your ideas by them, and get their feedback. I will encourage you to strongly consider doing that, especially if you're not hitting your goals on practice exams. And the thing is, please don't say, oh, you know what, I want to get in the 240s on my exam. And then let's say you're getting in the 210s, like a week to your test, and then you're hoping and praying for a miracle on test day. Don't get me wrong. Again, miracles happen, right? But you also have to be realistic, right? I mean, like even the Bible says that faith without works is dead, right? So if, for example, you're like, oh, I'm going to get in the 250s on my test, and then you adopt like a lackadaisical approach, during your dedicated period and all that stuff, and you're not studying as hard as you should, and let's say you get like a 210, like 3 days before your test, and you're hoping for a 250, you're setting yourself up for a lot of pain when your score comes out, okay? Yeah, then people have seen that, oh, they got like in the 220s before their, right before the exam, and then they took their test, and boom, they got like 250s, 260s. Absolutely, there are people like that. But those people are extremely few and far between. So again, you want to be realistic. Don't you're setting yourself up for a huge disappointment if you're counting on that. Now, another problem that commonly props up is you see people, they've done a ton of studying, but their scores are not budging. It's usually one of two problems, right? One, they either don't know things as well as they should, right? Or two, they may have just bad test-taking strategy, right? Both, you can fix them yourself, or again, speak to someone experienced in these matters. They can usually look through whatever studying you're doing or whatever strategies you're applying, pick out the things that are not working, give you recommendations on things to turn around, and then point you in the right direction. And then another thing is, please don't be paralyzed by anxiety, right? So I know anxiety is a big part of preparing for exams, right? I mean, many people are like, this exam is so important, it can determine a big portion of my future, which is true, right? But the thing is, don't let anxiety paralyze you, right? Step one is a hard exam, don't get me wrong, but it's not impossible. Step one is a very doable test. If you're just going with the right plan, the right mindset, and discipline in executing the right plan and right mindset that you already set up from the beginning. Just remind yourself, if you have that solid plan, if you are disciplined in execution, we got on your side, you'll succeed. And again, if you're feeling overwhelmed, please speak to somebody. I'm begging you, speak to someone. Don't go it alone. Speak to somebody. Speak with a trusted person. Again, a person that has experience handling these issues. And again, don't just focus on learning and studying. Also, focus on building up your test-taking skills. Doing well on step one is not just about knowing the information. It also revolves around being a good test-taker. And again, you can build your test-taking skills. You can build your test-taking acumen. But those are things you can build by studying and thoroughly reviewing your practice questions. I mean, the people that I work with one-on-one, yeah, I go over, I teach them, like, I review practice exams with them, and as I do those reviews, I go over like test-taking strategy in the context of taking MBMEs, but those are things you can also do on your own if you review your practice test thoroughly. Yes, I do that with people when I do my one-on-one private tutoring, but again, those are things you can pick up on your own if you just spend your time really thoroughly reviewing your practice exams. Now, let me speak to this subset, right? So say, for example, you're the person that has been getting like in the high 90s on your preclinical exams. That is usually an indication that you've learned the material well, and it's usually an indication that you do pretty well on your exam. So you may not necessarily need 12 weeks to study or something ridiculous to kill your test. You just need to have like a good solid plan, and you should be able to do pretty well with like 5-6 weeks of studying. Let's see, what else do I want to mention? One thing I will say is, you see some people, they start off their dedicated period and they're trying to memorize every minutia known to man. That is, again, also not a great strategy. The thing is, you want to spend, in fact, I'll say a ton of your dedicated period getting the big picture down first. Like, I can almost promise you, if you get the great majority of the big picture down first, you can easily, again, and assuming you're a good test taker, you can easily get to the 230s, 240s without issue. When you hit these thresholds, then you can start hunting down minutia, right? You see people say, oh, Divine, I want to learn every minutia, but they're like, they're still at like a 200 in terms of practice test scores. Now, the reason you're getting a 200 is those big picture details, you don't know them well just yet. So I'll encourage you, and like I'm telling you, you may say, Divine, you're lying. The thing is, remember, the USMLE exam is a competency test. They basically want to test that you have like a certain base of knowledge. I'm telling you this. If you don't have bad test taking strategy and you know most of the big picture really well, you can get in the 230s, 240s on the USMLE exams. That is one thing I can tell you with a strong degree. Again, I'm not saying with 100% confidence, but with a very strong degree of confidence. Again, given not just even my experiences, given not just my experiences, but just, again, from many people I have tutored, many people I have advised, right? If you have the big picture down, even if you don't necessarily know minutia, if you have the big picture down and you have like just, you don't even have to have phenomenal test taking skills, just decent test taking skills, you can get in the 230s, 240s on your exams. But if you want to start going into the 250s, 260s, 270s, then you need to have the basics down. You need to have minutia down and you need to be an excellent test taker. And those are all skills you can work on, but get to that 230, 240 threshold first, and then you start building on those things. You start building from there. Now, one other thing is, if you're getting in the 190s or like early 200s on exams, in fact, I'll say if you're getting less than a 207, for example, I would highly recommend not taking the exam. You're actually at a very high risk of failing under those circumstances. Basically, if you have those scores, your foundation is not good. I will encourage you in those circumstances, step away from review resources, step away from the first aid, step away from the U world, go back, relearn your basics from a good, super detailed like learning resource like Boards and Beyond. Boards and Beyond is excellent for this purpose. Or those Kaplan lecture notes, they are excellent for this purpose. And then go back to your review resource after that. Please don't take the exam. Because really, like, yeah, can you bring yourself back? If you fail the exam, like retake it again and match and all that stuff, yes, that is totally doable. But I will tell you that you're putting significant odds in your way if you fail the exam. So if you're getting like in the 190s, if you're getting like 10 points, just like 10 points above passing, I will highly recommend do not take the exam, right? Yeah, there may be pressure from your school and you may not have many options, but I would rather you take time off and go and study hard, get those foundations right. And the thing is, you can prevent yourself from getting in these problems if you, again, have an honest assessment of yourself from the beginning and then come up with a solid plan that will deal with all these issues. But life happens, things happen. But if you're around these score ranges, I will tell you this, you're at a very high risk of failing your exam. And yes, you can retake the exam, yes. But I'm telling you, if you retake the exam after failing, you've just introduced another mountain that you need to overcome in getting to residency. I'll just tell you that right off the bat. Listen to me here. I'm not mincing words. This is very important. And again, what is a general thing I tell most people, right? Take a baseline exam at the beginning, right? So like the very first day of your study period or like a week before, take a baseline MBME. Take the oldest one, maybe like MBME 13, if it's still being sold now. See where you are. That will tell you your strengths and weaknesses. And many times, it can actually like light a fire under you and tell you that, okay, maybe I need to study a lot more than I planned to. Okay? That's one thing I'll just recommend. And then spend like your first few weeks, like the first half of your dedicated period, carefully going through a review resource, assuming your knowledge base is good, or carefully going through a learning and review resource. And then after that, you can then start taking practice tests every week. I mean, there are more specific study schedules for step one that you can set up. But I'll just say in general, that is what I recommend that people do. I mean, for me, like my routine during my dedicated period was like, basically, like wake up in the morning, pray, work out, and then after that I get going early. So I'm a morning person. I'm a 4 a.m. kind of guy. Get up in the morning at 4 a.m. and start your day kind of guy, right? So start early, pray, work out, and then after that I go to my med school or I stay at home and just study as much as possible. Usually I'll take like small breaks here and there, but I usually take like a big break in the afternoon to like relax, sleep, nap, whatever. And then I'll study for as long as I could go till like probably like late afternoon, early evening, and then I retire for the day. I was not the person that will study the whole day till midnight. No. I almost never did that. I also valued having a life, watching Netflix and all that stuff while I was going through my dedicated period. But I knew that my maximum times of focus were like morning, early afternoon. So I got up very early and just used those times to my advantage. And then, let me say this. When you're taking your exam, make sure you print your permit in advance. Before the day before your test, go to your testing center and just know what it looks like, right? So that, like, know, like, where can you park? Where can you do this? Where can you do that? It just gives you this level of confidence going into your exam. One other thing I also did is, again, make sure you pack lunch, right? Like literally plan your meal, right? Don't give yourself foods that will cause tummy upsets during the exam. That's not a prudent strategy. So plan your meal, eat well on exam day, right? It will only help you. Get good sleep, right? If you need to work out for hours and hours to like burn yourself out so that when you get home and take a shower, you just crash for like 9 hours, do that. But I'll encourage you, try to get good sleep before you take your exam. And then one thing I think I started doing it for like step 2 CK was just taking Tylenol prophylactically the morning of my exam so that headache is not something I have to deal with during my test. Now, one thing I will go ahead and say, and this is for if you have lower classmates you're advising in the future that are starting out first year, let me beg you to do something with those people. Here is it. If you're a med student that is just starting up med school, I will encourage you to focus on crushing your preclinical coursework. That should be your first priority. Like, study like you want to get 100 on each of your preclinical exams. If you fulfill this first priority and have time for nothing else, have time for no other like step one studying on the side and all that crap, that is 100% absolutely fine. I can tell you this from my experience as a tutor and a teacher. The people that are near the top of the class grade-wise in their preclinical coursework are almost always the people that are at the top with regards to USMLE percentiles. That is probably the one thing that has the strongest correlation with doing well on the USMLE exams. Yes, are there people that are bottom barrel in the class and then they bring it on step one and get in the 250s, 260s? Absolutely, there are those people. But in my tutoring career, I have identified an extremely limited number of those people. Okay, and again, I have tutored for many years. So, again, take everything I say with a grain of salt, but I'm telling you, make your first priority, study for your preclinical exams to understand, study to get the best grades possible. That is though, even if your curriculum is supposedly low yield, I can promise you that is probably one of the most critical things that will prepare you well for step one, regardless of how low yield your curriculum seems. The thing is, many med students are bad at estimating what is high yield and what is low yield. And another thing is, if, for example, you've studied really hard for your preclinicals and you feel like, okay, I have some extra time, then by all means, you can pick up like a good learning resource like Boards and Beyond on the side and study from that, or pick up like an Anki deck and do that. But again, if you are doing those things at the detriment of getting the best grades possible in your preclinical coursework, I'm telling you this. Again, I know you don't have to believe me, but I'm telling you that you are making a mistake. That is a very bad strategy to go off of. If you don't believe me, just go ahead, find people that scored above a 245 on their USMLE exams and just ask them. Just take like a poll. Just ask, especially those people that are like in the very high scoring ranges, just take a poll and ask them. I can almost promise you that the great majority of those people did really well in their preclinical coursework. Spend your early time understanding. All the rote memorization can come during your dedicated period. Okay? So, again, these are all my thoughts on things. They are not necessarily all correct, but I'm just, again, my best judgment on what I think has worked for me and has worked for the thousands of people I've tutored and thought over a long period of time. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And again, the message I put at the end of all my podcast, at least my more recent podcast, is I do offer one-on-one private tutoring for the USMLE Step 1, Step 2 CK, and Step 3 exams. The USMLE Step 2 CS exam, I prepare people for that. I've prepared tons of people for that. Also, the third-year shelf exams and the internal medicine in training exam and the internal medicine board exams. I do actually offer tutoring for those, one-on-one tutoring. I mean, obviously, it's on a paid basis. So I offer those. So if you need any of those, feel free to reach out to me either through my website or you can send an email to Divine Intervention podcast with an S at gmail.com, and I'll be happy to point you in the right direction. But again, I'm not saying this to sell anything to you. I have a lot of good content on my website that you can use and learn from it. Please, you don't need tutoring from me to do well. Many people do extremely well without tutoring from me, but I offer those things if you were to ever need them. And I also prepare ERAS applications for residency. I also do mock interviews, and also do the same thing with AMCAS applications for med school. So if you know anyone that needs any of those things or weirdly needs like organic chemistry tutoring, I can point you in the right direction with those things. So have a wonderful rest of your day. I know this was a lengthy podcast, but I think there's a lot of very good information here. So I'll see you in the next podcast. Have a wonderful day and God bless. And I hope the Lakers make the playoffs and LeBron comes back soon. See you next time.